Okay, we're going to continue talking this hour with John McAfee. We're going to take your phone calls as well. What happens if they try to take down the power grid? Can that be done through a computer system? Let's find out. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Before we get to calls, I'll keep talking with John McAfee about some issues here. John, can they take down somebody, the power grid, just through computers?
Well, yes, of course. There's literally nothing in the world that you need that can't be taken down through the computer. For example, if the stoplights, you know, we can, if someone could completely jam the traffic in a city by manipulating the computers that control stoplights. Your automobile, if you have a modern automobile, if the computer on your engine goes bad, it will not run. And certainly power grids are the most computer controlled. It's a very sophisticated formula trying to shunt electricity at various times of day to the places where it's needed. And that's all computer controlled. So absolutely, a virus or a hacker or any number of ways you could get into the computers that control the power grid and shut the whole thing down.
So as marvelous as the technology is, sometimes we may have gone too far, huh?
Well, I'm not sure we've gone too far. I think we've gone too fast. We do things sometimes without thinking through the consequences. Obamacare is a prime example. You know, we shove the thing out there without thinking. A very little thing like no central database of examiners means anybody can pretend to be an examiner and put up a website and steal your money.
That's a good point.
And it has nothing to do with too far. It means we went too fast to think of the consequences. And so that doesn't mean we can't do things like have computers control the power grid. I can just guarantee you that we got there so fast that the loopholes and the back doors are so many that any very competent hacker who had the mind to could get into it.
How many people like you do we have on our payroll trying to fight these problems?
Well, you know, like me, keep in mind that there's two sides to all, obviously. You know, the in order to be a fighter of these issues, you must also know how to do this. In other words, you can't create a pick-proof lock unless you can pick all other locks, can you?
That's right.
And so, you know, one of the downsides to my industry is there are unscrupulous people that realize the power of their knowledge and turn to the dark side. You know, I'm not one of them, by the way. But there's not a lot, really. It's a very narrow field, which requires a great deal of knowledge in some areas that don't interest a lot of people. They interested me, the area of mathematics, for example. So, you know, there are a few hundred of us, at least. Excuse me.
One of our past guests, Kevin Mitnick, former hacker, he went to jail. He's come out now, and, you know, he's a consultant to companies because he knows how to hack, so he knows what they're going through.
Absolutely. If you don't know how to hack, then you better not try to fight the hackers.
That's right.
You will lose.
That's absolutely true. You have got an official biography coming out sometime next year called No Domain.
Yes.
No holds barred.
Oddly enough, being written by George Jung, you know, he was at one point the largest cocaine dealer in the world. He's currently in federal prison in New Jersey, finishing.
Oh, that's right.
Pardon?
That's his nickname's Boston, isn't it?
Yeah, but Boston George, that's it.
That's him. Okay.
In fact, they made the movie Blow about him, starring Johnny Depp.
Okay.
Played George Jung, yes. You know, that was chosen by my publicist, you know, thinking it would make some good press. As you may or may not know, I make no secret about my life, and 35 years ago, a little more now, I guess, I was a drug dealer.
Wait a minute. While you were doing the software and the programming?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, the software and programming became almost a front for my dealing. I've always multitasked very easily.
You're Walter White.
Way, while I was doing the software engineering and working for these companies, I was doing an outstanding job and kept getting promoted. So it didn't seem to affect it too much. However, 33 years ago, I stopped all of that because it became very, very detrimental to the rest of my life. And I stopped using drugs. I don't use alcohol. I don't use drugs. And my life changed. However, that's a part of my life, and it's real, and I'm not trying to hide it. In fact, I warn everybody I meet that this is my background. You know, if this is going to embarrass you someday, if it comes out, you need to know this. So I'm telling you.
Well, I appreciate
so anyway, my publicist thought, well, you know, your background, your early life was very similar to George Jung's. Why don't we ask him to write your biography? And I talked to George. I liked him instantly, and we got along, and he jumped at the chance, and so he's almost finished with it. I love his writing style, by the way. Very poetic.
What got you to stop?
I'm sorry?
What got you to stop doing what you were doing, the dealing?
You know, because you can't keep it up forever. I basically crashed. I lost my wife, my friends. Drugs are a bad choice for anyone. I don't know what your personal views on this are, but I've had a great deal of experience.
And I'm not into drugs. I think we should legalize it, by the way.
I have no trouble with that. No trouble whatsoever. Well, when I say drugs, they're all types of drugs, you know. I mean, there's heroin, and there's methamphetamine, and there's cocaine, and I dealt everything. But it's a lifestyle that cannot be sustained. That's why I quit.
Now, were you doing this before or after your big hit with McAfee antivirus?
Oh, obviously before. There's no way someone could do a big hit like that and be on drugs. You just can't do it.
No, there's no way. Okay, let's take some calls with you, John. The hour's going to fly by here. We're John McAfee, of course. Let's go to Long Beach, California. John, you're on with John. Go ahead, John.
Another John. John to John. John, I want to ask you just real quick. I pulled this on my high school math teacher, and I just want to know, I told him that 9/9 is not as much as 2/2 because 9 goes on, you know, you divide it into 1, it goes on to infinity, and you only get 0.99999. You can do the same with 6 and 3, I think 7. And does that mean that basically our mathematical system, my one other question, if there's a mathematical system isn't perfect, there's some spatial diversity in it or difficulty because that is a real reality. 9/9 is not 1, it's 0.99999 going across. But I just wanted to mentioned that. Maybe you could think about it and mention it somehow.
Well, you know, I definitely don't want to argue with any of George's listeners, but in truth, 9/9 is in fact 1. Any number divided by itself is always 1, whether it's 9 or 9 million or 9 anything. But the real question is there a dissonance or an inexactness in our number system? And the answer is absolutely not. Now, there are discontinuities. There are ideas that simply cannot be proven. I think the well ordering of the real line is one of those things. But in fact, mathematics is the fundamental law of the universe. And the universe seems to exist and continue to function. So no, it is not imperfect. It is the description of reality.
John, where are we in relationship to the rest of this planet in terms of being on the edge of cutting-edge technology here in the United States?
We are so far behind that I can't begin to explain it to you, with one exception, and that is software engineering. We are number one. But in the physical sciences, you know, I would keep a very close eye on the Chinese. They are moving ahead so rapidly that it boggles my mind. And I don't know the reason for that. I don't think it's our education system. We have great professors. We have you know, great institutions. But something is holding us back.
How could we be so strong with computer software and then weak in these other areas?
You know, I'm not entirely sure. It's something within our culture. I think that the computers were used much more, you know, broadly here in America before in any other country, and they caught on. And the giant computer manufacturers were all Americans to start with. Univac, IBM, Xerox. Many people don't know that Xerox made computers for a while. And so we were so far ahead that we're still ahead. Whether we will continue to be ahead is another question.
Let's go to Olivia in Washington, D.C., east of the Rockies. Hi, Olivia. Good morning.
Wow. I am in awe to speak to someone. Two people on such cutting edge of mental freedom. Wow, I'm in awe. But please let me ask you this real quick.
Sure.
I'd like to know, Ms. McAfee, based on your knowledge with NASA, because you've actually been on the inside, what is your stance on the Face on Mars and the Sedona plane? And just let me add, I had an opportunity to take a tour of NASA in Greenbelt, and the official stance from the tour guide was, well, we don't know what you're talking about, even after I mentioned to him that the whole concept was introduced by Richard Hoagland, who was someone that was with the NASA as well. And he looked at me real strange. I didn't feel very comfortable after that. But I'd just like to know what your take is on that and life on Mars, the possibility and the travel to Mars, interplanetary thing.
All righty, Olivia. Okay. We'll take you into space a little bit here, John. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I have no problem with that. Well, they kept me very sheltered at NASA, so I was not privy to grand ideas at the time. I remember I was a much younger man. As to life on Mars and other things, here's something I thought of. For example, George, have you ever seen a baby pigeon, a city pigeon? I'm not talking about the carrier things.
A city pigeon?
Yeah. Have you ever seen a baby?
I never have. They've always been full grown.
No one's ever seen one. They don't exist. So now, all the pigeons are...
I'm glad I didn't guess.
...weigh 9.6 ounces. They're all up in the same thing. There are no babies. So whoever planted them here in cities, and by the way, why cities? No other birds congregate in cities. That's nonsense. So obviously they're here by put here by someone to watch us. So I don't know why we're looking for the UFOs. The aliens are among us now. So that's something to cogitate. And I'm sorry, I don't have a more complete answer to your question, ma'am. I lead a sheltered life.
I'm trying to think why I've never seen a baby pigeon.
No one's ever seen one. They don't exist. So,
well, they've got to exist.
They're dropped here by the spaceship on the 3rd of August every year. I don't know why they choose August. It's summertime and longer days. Nevertheless, you watch out for it. And go into some city about 2 o'clock in the morning on the 3rd of August, and you'll see the population of pigeons instantly double.
You come to L.A. with me, and we'll look at that next August.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
Let's go to Carlos in Carson, California. Welcome to the show. Hi, Carlos.
Yes, good evening, gentlemen.
Hi there.
Mr. McAfee, question for you. Snowden and the NSA, now, do you think, is there a possibility he could be an agent provocateur still working for the government undercover on a larger intelligence plot? The reason why I ask that is because I read that the government was working on whistleblower laws specifically designed to deter anybody working for the government against denouncing any government activities or whistleblowing, but also in family settings, in social settings. That means that if anybody denounces the government, let's say I'm a dad and I denounce the government, my son could be hearing and he would be liable. He would be liable to call the government and denounce me as a whistleblower. And if he didn't do that,
that
of course,
actually happened in Nazi
the law.
Germany and many other places. And, at the early part of the 20th century, as to whether or not I would know someone as an agent, a double agent, well, we would never know, sir. Our covert agencies operate on a level that is way beyond my comprehension and certainly way beyond my perception. I do know one thing. In life, all things are possible, and this, too, may be possible, sir.
If we wanted to find out a little bit more, John, about the Kennedy assassination, are there people out there trying to hack into files and things to get that?
Well, if I knew, I certainly wouldn't say. I don't want to get audited. Certainly people are trying to, but the files, keep in mind, files are entities that are created by humans. If someone knows something and doesn't put it in the file, I don't care how much you want to hack into it, it's not going to be in there. And I can promise you, sir, that anything truly important, like if there was a third man on the hill or whatever, it's not going to be in the file.
No, I don't think so.
It's not a matter of hacking into it and getting it. Was it placed in there to begin with, or is it in the head of someone, or did it fade from the earth when the person faded from our memory?
Or get shredded or whatever.
Yes, we don't know. So that would be the issue. I think we could easily hack in. What we would find would be unsatisfying.
We're with John McAfee. Let's go to Mark in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hi, John. John, welcome home and congratulations on your escape.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, so yeah, I was calling in reference to the NSA, their spying program, and the significance of that, particularly nowadays. I was a Treasury agent, and I was aware that, you know, there's all these different agencies are always constantly out there spying. And when they do this without our knowledge, and they do this without court orders, et cetera, they do it under the they will not be prosecuting anybody for the information they find out. And that's what our politicians are telling us nowadays is, yes, the NSA is spying. They got information on everybody, but they can't use it to prosecute anybody, which is
that doesn't
way of saying it. This is a safeguard against any wrongdoing. But now when you have something like the NDAA, where they don't actually prosecute you, they just take you into custody and they can hold you indefinitely like they do in Belize without any court hearings, your rights of the accused are basically gone, and they don't have to report to anybody that they've taken you into custody. So you can literally vanish overnight, and they could set it up so they could round up a lot of people, you know, at one time. That's the real problem with the NSA. Is there anything that you know of that could keep them from doing that?
Well, here's something I think of even more importance. Number one, life is in fact a dangerous affair, and people do disappear all the time. We know that. But let's go back to your original statement that the NSA is not going to prosecute. Well, I could care less. My neighbor is not going to prosecute if he's peeping through the window while I'm doing something private with my wife. The prosecution part is of far less concern than the fact that it's being observed. That's an invasion. You know, we can get out of jail, but how do you reverse that invasion of privacy? And to me, this is the big concern. Whether or not they prosecute, that simply does not resolve, in my mind, the problem. And it does not excuse the behavior.
John, what are you doing these days for your own privacy to protect yourself?
Well, you know, I have other people buy my computers for me. I never put my name on anything. I use techniques that mask my IP address.
Oh.
I don't do dangerous things like go onto porn sites or
right.
Open emails from people I do not know.
That's smart.
It sounds bizarre, but that's how I have to live, because I am obviously one of the prime targets for hackers, simply because if I were a hacker, I'd want to hack me, just so I can tell my friends, hey, I hacked my computer.
It would be a great thing for them to tell people, right?
Sure.
Amazing. You're into yoga a lot, I hear.
I am.
But one of our, we do a television show for a company that you might know of, Gaiam, which
of course, Gaiam makes some of the greatest yoga products around.
They sure do.
Yoga mats and blocks and all sorts of accessories.
Sure do. Do you feel comfortable enough to doing a TV show flying into Denver?
No, sir. Not if I'm doing yoga. I'm still 68 years old. I will not look the part, my friend.
Now, will you fly?
Thank you very much for inviting me. That was very kind of you.
Will you fly commercially? I mean, do you have any problems going through TSA, or do you not do that?
No, for some odd reason, the TSA. I'm always on the TSA pre list. I don't know why. If it were me, I would put me on search this guy twice, just because of my background. But no, I have no trouble flying for you.
All right, hold on, John. We're going to come back with final phone calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we're going to be back in a moment with John McAfee. We're going to take some final calls here. Hey, our Beyond Belief television show, would you like to watch it? You can, 10 days free. It's an incredible program. How do you find it? Go to beyondbelief.com. Simple as that, beyondbelief.com. And hey, would you like to be part of this television show? We're also looking to add a different segment to it. We'd like for you to call us by sending us this. We're going to send you an email address. I need you to send us your information, your phone number, and we're going to arrange some pre-recorded phone calls with you on the show. We tape the show, so we don't take phone calls live there, but we'll tell you who the guest is. You make up your own question, and we'll record it and possibly use it in the show. That email address is tvshowhelp, simple, right? tvshowhelp@yahoo.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. John, tell me about this documentary that's coming out on you sometime next year.
A feature-length documentary put together by You Recommend Media in Canada, and there are two feature-length films, one by Warner Brothers, they just announced a month ago, And they've hired the screenwriters and beginning work. And another one by a Canadian independent film company that already has a script and I think will probably beat Warner Brothers to the gate. I'm cooperating with the two in Canada. I'd be happy to cooperate with Warner Brothers, although it's based on a script by Joshua Davis, the young gentleman who promotes himself as having lived with me for the better part of a year in Belize, but in reality, he spent 4 days at my house and only a few hours actually talking to me. So I'm not sure exactly what that movie will portray. I'm anxious to see it, so I'll find out what I did, maybe.
All right, let's take some final calls here for you, John.
Okay.
And, we'll go to the Ozarks in Arkansas. Frank's with us. Frank, go ahead.
Hey, Mr. George, Mr. John.
Hello.
That new service you were talking about, will that be an IP-type service or a website service? And if it is, would you have like a secured email through it also?
Well, it's actually not a service. It's a little hardware device that you put in your pocket. It has no screen. And it communicates with your cell phone and with other devices within a quarter of a mile radius of where it is. And then what this device does is it creates a subnet beneath the Internet. We have an application that runs on your smartphone, and you press a button, and you shift over to the secure network. And it's definitely not based on the Internet protocol. It's our own private protocol, but it's completely secure. Anyone that even could intercept transmissions would have no concept where they came from or where they were going to. And everything is encrypted using a technique that was not developed by the NSA. So it's a brand new way of looking at communication. The network is in constant flux because as people move in and out of the quarter of a mile range, the network will constantly change. And things can be relayed across the planet or across the country, moving from one local subnet to the next.
Where do you get this little gadget, John?
You know, we'll have a prototype ready in about 6 months, and hopefully within a year we'll be marketing the thing.
It's fascinating. Every home should have one of those things.
Well, yeah, I'm going to have one, that's for sure.
East of the Rockies, Tom's in Long Island, New York. Tom, go ahead.
Good evening, George and John. How are you guys doing tonight?
Great.
That's fine, Tom. How are you?
Pretty good. Pleasure to talk to you. Well, first of all, let me say I can't wait for that gadget you got to come out. I'm super excited about that. Most of these guys hit on a lot of the topics that I wanted to talk to you about, like basically how you were protecting yourself in this whole crazy surveillance state we're living in and all this other stuff. And I kind of wanted to, well, let me just share a story, first of all. I've been listening to Alex Jones sometimes. I listen to
through, Yeah. John knows him. John knows him.
I listened through like a third-party application called TuneIn on my phone.
Yes.
It's actually a really cool application. And I've never signed up through that thing. I never put my email, never gave them any kind of idea of who I am. And I don't listen to Pandora anymore, but whenever I did listen to that, I would listen to music. And I just got an email from them the other day telling me that they've updated the Alex Jones channel, so I might want to check that out. So somehow they made the connection between the two.
Right.
How they did that, which I think is kind of crazy.
Well, you know, what happens is if you run an application on your phone, that application is quite capable of digging into any of your phone records and accessing it and doing whatever it wants with it. For example, here's something you may not know, okay? The Bank of America app that runs on Android, you know, the regular banking app, if you read the fine print, when you agree to all the terms and conditions, you agree that they can turn on the camera at any time they want, and that they can use your cell phone services anytime they want. What that means is, while you're in the app, or even while you're not in the app, they can take a picture of you or whoever's on the phone and send it to themselves. Now, I know why they did this, because with online banking, you know, if you remove all the funds from your account, you can call and say, "I didn't do that. Someone stole my phone."
That's a good point.
They can say, "Well, maybe, but this looks like your picture here."
And here's the time. Here's the time but the funds, yeah.
But what's scary about that, I mean, I understand their need, perhaps, but what's scary about that is people just without thinking, say, "I agree." And what you've agreed to there is to let them watch you anytime that they want without your permission now. Once you've given the original permission, they don't have to tell you when they're doing it. Now, if Bank of America is doing this, I guarantee you there are many, many applications doing the same thing. We need to be much more cautious when we accept things, when we put apps on our phone. We've got to do our due diligence and actually read these terms. I know it sounds nightmarish, but if we don't, we're being foolish.
Japanese, where are they in relation to all of this? Are they close to the Chinese, close to us?
Yeah, actually, the Japanese are a little bit ahead, but still, the Chinese are accelerating with such great velocity that they're going to pass both the Japanese and us very quickly.
Probably in all areas, John, I would think, not just
absolutely.
Computers.
Well, first of all, the Chinese culture is a culture of hard work, learning, honesty, and creativity. They will work until it's done. They don't slack off. You know, the person that calls in work sick is frowned on, whether you're sick or not. Well, here in America, if we want to watch the football game, we may call in sick. They're hardworking people. They're bright people, and they are cooperative with each other. So cooperative efforts like large-scale software engineering are going to become very easy for them.
Next up, we go to Jason in Farmington, Missouri. Hey, Jace, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Hi, George.
Hi,
John.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, John, I wanted to ask you, have you ever gotten any of your really great ideas while you were dreaming or through meditation?
Well, you know, I can't really say. I don't know where my ideas come from. I'm just sitting there doing nothing and something pops in my head, you know, whether it was planted by one of these pigeons in the inner cities or you know, came from a past childhood memory, I can't tell you. Now, I do know that the issue is not where they come from, is that what do we do with them? I think that the average person, every person has great ideas. An idea, though, by itself has zero value, absolutely zero. It has to be implemented. You have to do something. You have to take action. And that's where we, especially as Americans, fall down. I'm not trying to say we've become lazy, but there seem to be too many distractions. You know, you could act on your idea, or you could go back and play your video game.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And there's the issue. So I wish I could answer your question. I don't know where ideas come from. I do know where they go if you don't act on them, and that is the garbage bin.
John, 68 years old. You seem like you're in pretty good shape. What do? Supplements? Eat right? What are your secrets?
I don't know that either. I live an unlikely life. I sleep less than 4 hours every night, and
wow.
I always have. I sometimes go for days without eating at all when I'm working on something. I'm not sure. I listen to my body. You know, if my body's hungry, I eat.
Do you watch your weight?
No, I don't really. I haven't weighed myself in 25 years. I'm concerned with it. I remain perpetually slim. My wife says it's because I never stop moving.
Well, that helps.
I guess it does. So I don't know what the secret is. I think loving what you do or doing what you love is one of the secrets. If you're happy with the work that you're doing, then you tend to be physically more fit than those who are unhappy with what they do.
John, you have seen this metamorphosis in this country over the past few years, whether you were in Belize looking in or you're here now. Where do you see us going as a nation in the next several years?
Well, you know, that depends on us, doesn't it?
Sure.
You know, we're right here on the cusp of a great time. That is, you know, we have sold much of our freedoms and our spirit because we were afraid. So, beginning with 9/11, we allowed the government to protect us from real and imagined fears by creating entities that controlled and reduced our freedoms. That was not a good thing. The cusp is now. I mean, it is reaching the point where if we do not stand up and take courage and collectively take action, then I fear for the worst. But we are Americans, and we were founded by some remarkably intelligent and forward-thinking people. And within the Constitution, as I said earlier, is the capacity for us to reverse this. We have to have the courage to. If I ruled the world, I would recall every single politician in Washington.
Good for you.
I don't care what party they're in. I don't care anything about that. Let's start fresh. Get some young minds without this desire to sit in a desk in the Washington Capitol for the rest of your life, you know, to getting your perks and your powers. That's all government is all about. Government, you know, it used to be that the only people who went into government were those who were willing to sacrifice, because that's what it was. You are sacrificing your own life, not physically, but your future and things for the service of those people that were the citizens. And only the greatest of people would do that. Now it's not a sacrifice. You know, we crawl all over each other trying to become congressmen and senators and powerful people. That's wrong. There's something wrong with that. We have to get back to the basics. We have to get back to that concept that Thomas Jefferson first had, freedom.
Are you glad you're back in? You glad you're back here?
I'm certainly glad. I'm not in Belize. I am glad I'm back here. I went to Belize not because I was disturbed about the political situation here. I went there because Belize is the most magical and beautiful country in the world from a physical standpoint. So I have nothing against America. I love America. I am an American.
Did you have a house there? Did you just leave it?
I had a lot of things there. Most of which was taken, or one, they actually burned down one of my complexes. So I left everything.
That's a shame. Do you have any recourse?
No, absolutely not. I don't want recourse. I don't want to waste time fighting people. I don't want to waste time getting even. There's not enough time for any of us to do that. I just want to get on with life and continue to be curious and create.
Let's go to Ted, Silicon Valley. What do you got for us, Ted? Go ahead.
Hello, Mr. McAfee. Pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
You will never remember this, I imagine, but you gave me some great advice back in 1997, and I would just like to thank you for it.
What was that device, Ted?
What was it? Yeah.
Well, I was working at an internet startup music distribution company down in the South Bay, Silicon Valley. I had just graduated from Berkeley and thought that, you know, the world was supposed to be my oyster, and I ended up answering customer emails for $10 an hour in what was essentially a business run out of a storage locker. And one day in late 97, Mr. McAfee came by. We were all told, all of us employees, all five of us, that a very big investor was coming by. He wants to look at the company. He might be investing. He might even want to buy it. We have no idea, but just everyone be on your best behavior. And about noon, car rolls up, guy in a suit, you know, dressed to the nines, gets out, dark hair, really short. And we all look at him and we say, okay, well, that's got to be Mr. McAfee. There's two other people with him. There's this one guy who's wearing a Hawaiian shirt. He's got a goatee, really laid back. And he's with a really good looking woman. And the boss comes out and he's like, all right. And the suit is with him. They're bringing the suit into the back office. I said, okay, he's got his friends with him. You just show him around. Be nice. We're going to be talking. So we're okay. This guy, Mr. McAfee, must be back in there with the boss. And so I'm sitting there and I'm answering customer emails. This was back before Amazon. This was back before anyone knew of this whole internet thing.
Right.
And I'm sitting there and this guy comes over. He's like, hey, what you doing? And I'm just like, yeah, you know, Joe in Ohio here got a problem with his order and I'm just trying to be nice. And he's like, yeah, okay. And how do you like your job? What do you do? And show me around. And, you know, we're reading emails together. And this guy is just the most, not just polite, but just, you know, personable. Just, you know, he's genuinely interested in what I'm doing.
It was the guy in the Hawaiian shirt, wasn't it?
Guy in the Hawaiian shirt. And he's like, so what you doing? How'd you get this job? I'm like, well, you know, I've been going to Cal, and my brother had been working this warehouse job at a music distribution center, and he talked to the management and got an idea, and now he's kind of selling wholesale to the customer. I don't really understand how this works. Somehow people go online and they buy CDs and we ship it to them. And he's like, oh, that sounds kind of cool. But do you really enjoy it? And I'm like, yeah, no, really, I don't. You know, it's just kind of something I'm doing while I'm spinning the wheels. And he's like, you know what? Quit. Don't do this. I can tell you're unhappy. Do not do this. Go do something else. What do you want to do? I'm like, I want to go to LA and, you know, try my hand writing scripts in Hollywood. And he's like, do that.
And you did that. We're almost out of time here, but John, do you remember that one?
You know, I'm sorry I don't. You know, Was this in the Scotts Valley by any chance?
This was in Union City.
Union City. No, I'm sorry, I don't. My memory fails.
Would you have said something like that?
White scripts.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you so much.
Well, you're very welcome. But I do want to know, did you, in fact, write scripts?
So you guys left. My manager came out. He said, you were just talking to John McAfee. What the heck were you telling him? And I said, dude, I'm just showing him your website. He told me to go to L.A. and write scripts.
I
went to L.A. and I did write scripts, and I did very well for myself.
Good for you, Ted. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, congratulations, Ted. I'm glad you took that advice.
John, for people who are emerging like you did in the early days, is this a great field for them to go into, the field of computer science and programming?
Well, you know, I'm going to have to give them the same advice I gave Ted. You know, don't go into any field because you think it's a great field, or you think that there's money in it, or you think that there's opportunity. Instead, sit down very quietly with yourself and ask yourself who you are and what you want. You know, if you're the type of person that likes to go rock climbing and be outdoors and fish and things, you may be totally miserable in the computer field. If, on the other hand, you from the day that you were six and got your first video game, you fell in love with computers and wanted to know more about them, then, yeah, it's a good field. There's no field any better than any other. It's where is your heart and what do you want?
And exactly right. John's website's, again, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. You can follow him on Twitter as well, and he's blogging. And the blog is whoismcafee.com, which is also part of his website. John, be safe, and you take care of yourself.
Thank you very much, George.
John McAfee, he did it his way. Now, when we come back in a moment, the government of Peru is reopening its UFO files. Why? We'll be talking with Alejandro Rojas about that and some other incredible stories that are happening way up there. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.